what they do is they deploy from underwater, they deploy buoys, and the buoy is an antenna. Sometimes at very big depth, it is impossible to have a wire connected to it. So what they do is they communicate with it, and that acts as a transceiver where the low frequency is being delivered to the buoy, and the buoy is then contacting to the satellite. But because of the low power, sometimes that buoy actually deploy a balloon. And the balloon, when it flies, is another link between the buoy and the satellite. When I was talking about electrically short antennas, intelligent communication and electrical engineering, electrical length refers to the length of electrical conductor in terms of phase shift introduced by transmission over the conductor at some frequency. So there is a little bit confusing description of what is electrically long, and it's differently stated in different parts of the internet when you look at it. But what we can understand is that the length is small compared to the fundamental resonant length at the operating frequency, which is 1/4 of the wavelength. The radiation resistance of the antennas, the resistance that represents power radiated as the radio waves drops as their length becomes small compared to the quarter wavelength. So the radiation resistance of antennas on the LF and VLF bands is very low.
Yeah, and the problem with that is any kind of insertion loss is going to make it far less efficient. As you raise the radiation resistance, the insertion loss becomes less and less of a factor. So if you decrease the radiation resistance effectively and you just keep the insertion loss resistances the same, far more of the current is dissipated by the insertion losses than they would if you had a decent amount of radiation resistance.
Yes, I agree with that. So I was talking about the DL-11 and VL-11 antennas that have often as low as 1 ohm or less. However, there are other larger resistances in the antenna ground circuit that can consume a significant portion of the transmitter power. The larger resistance in the antenna ground circuit is often the ground system, and the transmitter power is divided proportionally between it and the radiation resistance. So the resistance of the ground system has to be kept very low to minimize the wasted transmitter power. And to actually, okay. So we're talking about the low frequencies. The resistance of even a good ground system in the high conductivity soil can consume a major portion of transmitter power. Another source of the resistance is dielectric losses from the penetration of radio waves into the ground near the antenna due to the large skin depth at low frequencies. Therefore, particularly the VLF frequencies, large counterpoises, are sometimes used instead of buried grunts to reduce the ground system resistance, allowing more of the transmitter power to be radiated. Dr. Roy.
Okay, I have no comments per se.
Sometimes a counterpoise is combined with an ordinary grunt with the buried, how do you pronounce buried properly?
I'm not quite sure what the word is. Could you kind of give me a definition and I can kind of figure it out?
B-U-R-I-E-D.
Buried?
Thank you. Sometimes a counterpoise is combined with those radials that are buried. Thank you. So the buried red ground cables brought over the ground near the base of the antenna to form counterpoise. The area of the counterpoise around the base of the antenna is often covered with the copper screening to shield the ground, to reduce ground currents. And that's what I was talking about. I was talking about Marconi trying to compete with Tesla. The fate of Marconi fighting with Tesla was quite interesting. He died faster than Tesla, and Tesla didn't get the grant, didn't get the patent. Well, that was different. Tesla died in 1943, and only after his death, the government of the United States gave the rights to the patent to wireless technology to Tesla, already dead. And Marconi was dead too. Let me jump. And that was done from political reasons. When in 2019, government of the United States shut down the plant in Bolinas, California, of Marconi, he was so mad, and he was also a very, very wealthy man, and he decided to sue government of the United States for using his wireless technology in World War One. And he thought he's gonna win, but he died faster than Tesla. Now, after Tesla death, government of the United States, in order to end the fight with the members of family of Marconi, decided to revoke the rights of Marconi to wireless technology and give it to Tesla, who didn't have any children, and to XGN, Dr. Roy.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stories about Nikola Tesla, and I got a bobblehead of him just 2 feet away from me right now. So, brilliant man, not completely 100% sane, kind of argumentative, and towards the end of his life, he would often mention that a pigeon that roosted on his window was his wife. So I could understand why he didn't have any children.
That's interesting. Many people agree with you, but there is also the note by many of famous people standing there about themselves. If you are a genius, you can't be normal. The size of that counterpoise, if we would make some summary, because it's 108, and I'm occupying the repeater for so long time. So the size of counterpoise used for radio work depends on the wavelength of the transmit frequency. With monopole antenna, the counterpoise functions as the ground plane reflecting the radio waves radiated downward to the antenna, should extend at least half of the wavelength from the antenna or antenna tower in all directions. In designing a counterpoise for medium wave radio station, for example, radio waves are a minimum of, say, 500, 600 meters. They give you a specific number, 566. So that would be 1.857 feet long. Therefore, the counterpoise should extend 282 meters, which would be 925 feet from the tower, to make a circle 566 meters. And that's the quote from Wikipedia, use of low frequencies. And to XGN.
2 Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich?
Chime in. As you know, I'm visiting my daughter tomorrow. I have to get up very early. Could I ask my question and then you get back to Wesley?
I finished. Thank you very much. And to XGN.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wesley. Nikola Tesla, interesting guy, brilliant guy, probably crazy. A lot of brilliant guys are brilliantly wrong at times. I bring up the story of Linus Pauling, who was a Nobel Prize winner in chemistry, brilliant guy, charming guy, met the guy once. Completely wrong about vitamin C, completely wrong about DNA. He had a very curious theory about rather than it being a spiral stairway, it was three things twisted together. Anyway, we'll say that for another day. Rich, please tell us your comment and your question for tonight.
Hey, well, I got a new rig, and I did a DNA sweep of frequencies from 60 hertz up to 150 megahertz, and in the 2 meter band, both my vertical antenna and my mobile RIP dipped down below 3 to 1 SWR. The RIP went down to like 1.5 or so to 1 SWR, but the vertical remained up there at 2.5 to 1 SWR. I've spoken to guys today, you know, it says don't sweat it, you know, whether you're running 25 watts or 50 watts, 2.5 to 1 isn't horrendous. I wonder, Roy, if you concur with that.
WB2EAD will comment.
Yes, Ed, please comment.
When you did that sweep, you narrowed down to look around 2 meters, because if you do a wideband sweep on the VNA, you don't get any real accuracy.
No, it has, this DNA, when it charts out the sweep, it has gray lines, gray vertical lines from the top to the bottom of the chart where the hand bands are. So it's very easy to spot what your SWR is, you know, in the 2 meter band. And like I said, respectively, the RIP was 1.5 to 1, and the vertical, it's an 8-foot tram vertical, couldn't get below 2.5 to 1. There's no tuning stub on it or tuning anything on it, because I took it all apart the other day, and that's the best I could get out of it. And I wonder also, Roy and Ed, if you could call that I shouldn't sweat it at 2.5 to 1 on VHF with 25 watts.
My point is, it's marginal. Let me say it's marginal. My point is, I'm talking about the test equipment. The wider the frequency range you scan, the less accurate the results. Have you tried narrowing it down to sweep from, say, 140 to 150 megahertz only? But if you do an entire wideband sweep, you're not going to get accurate results. The idea is to bring it in close, and that improves the accuracy of the reading. It may be a false reading. These VNAs and spectrum analyzers can lie to you if you don't narrow them down.
Well, I didn't narrow it down this time. I have in the past narrowed it down. The thing is, it matches up with exactly with my SWR meter. So they're reading the same, so that's why I didn't go to an hour reading. I will during the week just to make sure I'm getting the most accurate. And I agree with you. If you want to really zoom in on this, and also increase the number of points that's being plotted, you know, you'll get more accuracy. WTBZ, right?
Yeah, the slower and more painstaking, the more accurate. And 2.5 is blah. It's not good. It's not terrible.
Yeah, I would agree. The problem with VNA is if you set the spectrum wide enough, it does basically averaging across a relatively wide spectrum. And so if there are these little peaks or little valleys, it'll be completely lost in the curves that it generates. But I'm a little concerned by you have a VNA that says you have a 2-to-1 VisWa, but you have a SWR watt meter that says that you have approximately a 1-to-1 VisWa. Isn't that correct?
The 1-to-1 is on a different antenna, my mobile whip, my Larson mobile whip, and the VNA reads like a 1.5, 1.6-to-1, and the SWR meter reads the same thing. So with both antennas, the SWR and the VNA are matching up. That's why I didn't spread it out and go more accurately. Because I think even if I go more accurately, I'm going to get the same results with the VNA. As again, they're matching up with the SWR meter, separate thing.
Here's a question. Is this a commercial antenna giving you a 2.5 VisWa?
That it is. It's giving me... at this frequency, 147.975, it's giving me 2.5-to-1, and it is a commercial antenna. Lower in the band, it dips below 2. Like at 145, it's about, well, what the mobile whip is at 1.5-to-1. I'm a little disappointed, though, because the mobile whip is about 1.5-to-1 across the 2-meter band, and this one takes off above 2. When you get up to about 147.
And how long is the radiating element?
The radiating element is 8 feet long.
Say again, please.
The radiating element is 8 feet long.
Roy, why do I think he's got some kind of opening coupling coil in that unit?
Yes, there is. Well, it comes in two sections. The upper section you could slide the outer casing off of, and it's a coil. It's about a 4-foot coil. It's a 2-meter 440 antenna, and but there's absolutely in the instructions and in the wherever I looked online, there's no way to really tune the antenna. Maybe you know how to tune it.
I'm wondering if something's defective. Roy, what do you think?
I tend to think it's defective. Rich hasn't mentioned it's a Tram brand, which I've never heard of before. They do sell it on Amazon. My guess is it's of Chinese manufacture, and it has the strangest VNA sweep I have ever seen. I am unfamiliar with a sweep like that. It almost has the sweep of a capacitor, just a pure capacitor with a little bit of noise introduced. Anyone interested to see what the VNA sweep is? I put it on my link page, so just type roy.ac2gs.com, and you can actually see what the sweep is. And it's a very, to me, confusing sweep, given that it's going from 0 to about 160 megahertz, and it seems to have this downsloping capacitive quality that looks more like a capacitor than a radiating antenna.
Question.
Okay, Wes, please ask your question.
The curve of discharge capacitance starts from a higher voltage and goes slowly bending to the zero. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, I'm making some inferences because this particular curve is doing VisWas for a 50-ohm impedance. So it starts off at above a VisWa of 10, and then it slowly goes down with a kind of superimposed little peaklets all throughout. So it's not like it's the standard resonance curve tends to be, it starts with a high VisWa, goes down to 1-to-1 or close to it, and then goes back to high. This one isn't doing that. This one starts high and keeps on sloping downwards if you connected a capacitor instead of an antenna to your VNA.
And I have a problem with that because that depends from the bandwidth. So starting frequency versus end of frequency, if you keep it based on the peak, then you're going to see only one peak. And we have a different width of ham radio band. So which one are you talking about? 80 meters?
Since my Greek experts, DNA, but it makes sense. The visual makes sense. It does come down erratically, but both antennas, the mobile antenna and the WIP, both do reach their minimums in the 2 meter band.
Okay, Rich, but my problem is it's a very non-classical antenna curve. You know, antennas sort of should look vaguely like a tuned network where your resonance is at the point where the inductance and capacitance are nulled out and you're left with a radiation resistant reading. So it's pure resistance. That's not what this curve kind of looks to be like. It looks way different. If you look up a VNA sweep of a capacitor, except for the spikes superimposed, you'll see a curve very, very similar to the one that's outlined in green on your scan.
The one in green is the mobile WIP, and they both, as they're coming down, well, it's what Ed said. If this was just 144 to 148, you would just see very smooth lines below 2.0, Roy. Don't you agree?
Can I ask another question?
Yeah, sure, Ed, please.
I have a 40-year-old, 7-foot, 2-meter collinear that I sometimes with a 3/8-inch-24 mount and a trunk lip mount that I often use on my car. I was getting worried about it, so I bought a new one from Hustler, 7-inch collinear array, 3/8-24 trunk for the mounted on a trunk lip mount. Both of them, out of the box, 1.1:1 or better. That antenna is busted.
Yeah, I kind of would agree with you. I'm a little confused, Rich. I think you mentioned, I was talking about the green one having the capacitive discharge, and I think you mentioned that it was your WIP, but according to your email, the orange one is the WIP, which also has a somewhat strange curve going on. But the green is the tram vertical. At least that's what you sent me.
Correct me, I sent you that the orange one was the WIP, right? That gave a better SWR at 147.3.
Yeah, that one doesn't exactly have that capacitive curve that I noticed the tram does, which is, you know, Ed's kind of saying it's not quite working right. And again, if anyone is interested, go to roy.ac2gs.com and take a look at the curve for yourself. It looks a heck of a lot like a capacitor discharge, a VNA sweep. Your WIP, on the other hand, has a nice dip at the middle of 2 meters, and then I think it spikes because I lose track of the green. It's covered up by the orange, and I can only assume it's I don't know what happened to the green during that point right after it leaves the 2 meter band range. It disappears. So I assume that it was doing the same exact jump all the way up that the orange one was, but that's a hell of a coincidence.
Well, you assume correctly that the green line of the tram jumps up. I don't know if it jumps up all the way. Well, it does jump up all the way, just like the just like the whip does. So that also makes me think that, you know, they're tuned right, because right after the 2 meter band, these antennas go bonkers. And you think that they should go up slowly after the 2 meter band, but they don't. They go up fast. As I said, I'm getting a nano DNA to match it against this. As you know, I've had a little trouble with the Wig Expert DNA, but I got it working, and it seems to be doing. Seems to be reading out just as my power meter is reading out. That's why I'm putting some weight on it. But we'll see. By Wednesday, I'll know if the Wig Expert AA0 is not functioning well. A bad antenna, if you can call it a bad antenna. And there are a lot of trams sold out there. You have to just look on YouTube. But that doesn't mean they're not from China.
Are you ready for heresy?
Yes, Edward. Anytime you want to be heretical, feel free. I just want to add that I have run a lot of traces in my short career as an amateur radio operator. I have never had two antennas have the exact same sweep across 10 megahertz. So, again, the fact that the green and the orange line up perfectly, makes me highly suspicious of this device. But please, Ed.
Heresy 101. Don't worry about the patterns on the VNA. You have one antenna that over multiple measuring systems gives you an SWR of 1.5. You have another antenna over multiple measuring systems gives you a SWR, the same radio, I'm not listening, of 2.5. There are no adjustments. There is actually nothing you can do. I do not see what relevance all these other discussions have. It's like navel gazing. Try and count the number of fairies that can fit on the head of a pin. It has no relevance to the subject. There are no adjustments. One test good, one test bad. Quadra rat them and stratum, and so it is proved. You got one good one and one bad one.
Okay, point taken, Ed. You know, you're a facts guy. I'm a theory guy. I like to understand why things do the things they do. So if I'm shown a tracing that confuses me, I want to work it through as opposed to just say, throw the bad one away, use the good one.
Coming.
Yes, Wesley.
What is the radiated energy loss between 1.5 to 1? And 2.5 to 1. That would be probably the answer. And to actually...
No, the problem is the transmitter shutdown.
That's all right.
Well, as Ed mentioned, the problem is not the power loss, because it's not that consequential. The problem with many radios is they do not like power being reflected back into them, and very often will respond by folding over the output power and giving you a very low transmission signal. So Ed's point was well put, that you don't want any significant reflected power getting into your transmitter because of its safety features, even though the total loss of reflected power is not going to make or break anyone.
Coming down from 0 megahertz to down to, you know, 147, they're not identical at all. But as Ed said, it may have, a wearing effect on the finals, but I'm going to run this radio at 25 watts anyway. People have told me today that it's clear enough at 25 watts going into Selden, and all I wanted is to reduce some of the noise going into Selden so you guys wouldn't have to put up with my HT that I had before, or my other Chinese radio that was supposed to be 25 watts but turned out to be 8 watts. That's why I'm monitoring the power on on the radio now, which is holding steady, that, yeah, I wish it was one-to-one on the vertical, but it's not. Go ahead, Maria.
Okay, very good. By the way, I looked up, apparently the AA30 has been discontinued, although looking at Rig Expert's website, you don't really see that, but if you go to any retailer, it usually lists it either as out of stock or discontinued. So I think they've kind of stopped manufacturing and selling just the blank boards.
First of all, they're in Kyiv, which is being maybe bombarded by the Russians as we speak, but that's not the reason. I think the nano DNA, this was $100, just the circuit board, and you have to jump through hoops to get it read on a USB port, but the nano DNA probably knocked this board out. You know, at $59 to get a standalone unit rather than just a circuit board, they probably said, what's the use, you know?
AC2GS. Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think it was cost effective for them any longer. They're still in the VNA business, and even though the terrible things that are going on, their website is still active. They have a lot of good models. I myself own an AA600. They have a whole class of portable VNAs. They have a new line called the Zoom line, which has a nice color display. So if you like to carry around a sturdy VNA hanging from your belt, take a look at Rig Expert. They make a good equipment. I have one Rig Expert VNA. I have one Ray Solutions VNA, and I have a Nano VNA. I guess I've become a VNA collector.
There was another station.
Yes, David, you wanted to say something?
Well, I don't want to take too much time. Maybe later or next week, I want to talk with you about the Windows 10 cheap computer and the things that I've done with it, three specific things.
Sure. I would assume this topic, we pretty much jumped, beat it up. So I don't think it's going to last much longer. So if we have some free time after this discussion, I'll give you a call on the radio and you can bring that up. So, Rich, good luck with using your radio the way it is. Yeah, I am hearing you. There's a little bit of crackle. There's a little bit of I think it's kind of over bass or something. There's a little softness in the bass for some reason. But I'm hearing every word that you say. Whatever became of that Yagi that you were interested in?
I put it together and I put it up, and then we got some fairly big winds out here, and it just blew the Yagi right down. I mean, this thing was up 5 minutes, and it just caught the wind. It had too much, because it was mounted vertically, it had too much of head-on exposure to a northern wind, and it blew it right down. So that was the end of my Yagi career. On the North Fork here in Riverhead.
Oh, well, that's a shame. Yeah, it's certainly going to give you more wind resistant than verticals ever would, but I'm sorry to hear that. But were you able to test it at all, or just it was up 1 minute and down the next?
I was able to test it a little bit, and I wasn't able to take any readings because it was up 1 minute and down the next. But I did test it, and one thing I found interesting, even when I had it in the house, is that when the antenna was polarized horizontally, I couldn't hear Selden. As soon as I turned it vertically, I heard Selden pretty well with noise in the house, of course, but but and I kept on switching it back and forth from just holding it from horizontal to vertical, and boy, that vertical orientation meant a lot more to the signals that coming out of Sheldon than did like sweeping it across the horizon. It had about a 45-degree angle across the horizon where the signal would come in and out. But as soon as I turned that horizontally, I just lost Sheldon completely.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
You know, I find that any antenna, external, outside antenna, you know, I find that it's very important that I check the cables, the state of the cables. Cables going to the antenna, cables going to the tuner, from the tuner to the radio, etc., etc., etc. Because, you know, for some reason, you know, one cable can do better than the other. And how to say, maybe one of the cables is spent, you know?
Come in.
Such cables that have just worn out from the weather, and the cheap cables wear out faster. They deteriorate.
Yeah, that's true, and I've talked to Rich about it, especially one of his cables. I think he squeezes under the windowsill, which is going to kind of prematurely age everything. So that's a factor as well. Wesley, you wanted to say something on the subject?
Yeah, there was a very interesting thing said about 45 degrees towards vertical, between vertical and horizontal, and I have a few words about it.
Okay.
Linear or vertical polarization refers to the oscillation of the an antenna's electrical field, or either the horizontal or vertical plane. Slant polarization describes an electromagnetic field that oscillates at 45-degree angle to the reference plane. So circular polarization, CP, regards a radio wave that rotates to the signal as the signal propagates. Now, I also noticed that 45 degrees sometimes helps instead of being completely vertical.
Are you talking about circular polarization, Wesley?
I'm not really pounding on circular polarization, but I'm trying to pick up the point, what I've heard about 45 degrees towards vertical.
I have a story, Roy, if you're interested.
I am always interested, Ed. I just want to point out to the people who like trigonometry out there that theoretically, polarization angle of an antenna is basically related to the cosine function. So if you take out your old textbook on the cosine function, if your transmitter and receiver are 90 degrees in the opposite direction, if you look up the cosine of 90 degrees, you get a value of zero. So in a theoretical universe, two antennas at 90 degrees polarity to each other gives you no signal at all. But again, because we don't live in a theoretical world, things bleed through. So you get about a 15 to 20 decibel drop. It varies when you shift it, when you're trying to receive a signal using a horizontal antenna and your transmitter is vertical and you don't have too many things that might be causing Faraday rotation or reflections. But anyway, on to you, Ed.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far away, I was working on ground stations that would receive telemeter data from weather balloons. The weather balloon is tied to a radio sonde, which is a little device that measures temperature, barometric pressure, humidity, and has a little radio transmitter at 1,680 megahertz that radios the signal down to the ground. And we were working on the ground station, and we were running tests and flying radio sondes. And we found that we were getting terrible, terrible fading, and we ran some tests and found out, oh, by the way, these radio sondes are unbelievably flimsy, because if they are hit by an airplane, it cannot damage the airplane. So they're very, very flimsy, and they weigh almost nothing. And we found out the damn radio sonde was swinging like a pendulum so wildly that the normally vertical polarized transmit signal was going up 90 degrees and now was horizontal with zero reception. So what we did for our test was they had a cardboard box in the shop with some defective radio sondes. They always test them before they launch them. These failed the test. They threw them in a box. We would tie a string and have another dead radio sonde underneath it, sort of as a sea anchor that really helped that. And later on, we tried using a circularly polarized antenna. Of course, no matter what the angle was, you always have a 3 dB loss, but it never goes up or down. Roy, WB2EV.
Yeah, very good. That's great. Yeah, that's quite true. Circularly polarized antennas have that wonderful quality. You don't get as high a gain as you would if both of your transmitter and receiver are both horizontal or both vertical, but it's a great compromise, especially when orientation is a random thing. And I mention every so often my Flex is able to do diversity reception, and I have a horizontal antenna and a vertical antenna. And every so often when I'm lucky and I land on some guy in Florida, I can hear Faraday rotation take place in that his signal would move from my right ear to my left ear, back to my right ear, back to my left ear, as the Faraday rotation rotated the axis of the polarization. So yeah, circularly polarized antennas were a good idea.
Comment.
Circularly polarized antennas. If it's the right-hand polarization to right-hand polarization is just like vertical to vertical. Left to left is just like, you know, horizontal to horizontal. It's when you mix and match, you lose 3 dB.
Yes, I understand that. I was alluding to a regular linearly polarized antenna operating along with a circularly polarized one where you get the 3 dBs. Rich, what did you want to say?
To David's point about, you know, the coax, I wanted to ask you, I know you could use a VNA to measure to see if there's a fault in the coax. And by the way, I cut that window piece out of the coax. I'm now coming through my air conditioner to the outside, and there's no pressure on the coax at all, I'm happy to say. And I did cut that piece off. It was about a 6-foot piece of coax up until where it got it crushed a little bit. But with the DNA, you can measure, I don't know quite how, but you can measure if you have some fault in the coax. How do you do that, Roy?
AC2GS. There's something called time domain reflectometry, TDR. Sometimes they just have the initials. And what it does is it bounces a signal through the transmission line and it listens for reflections. And it will tell you the instantaneous impedance along the transmission line. In order to get the length correct, though, you have to enter the velocity factor of the transmission line you're testing. Otherwise, the VNA doesn't know how to judge the distances.
Velocity factor of just about all RG8s, RG8Xs, or whatever, is 66, 0.66. So I can do that. If you look on the chart I send you, you can click on different tabs, which will bring up different charts. Do I need to? If you can see that, which different chart do I need to bring up to take the value off of and figure in the 0.66 velocity factor?
When the defect is 1.3 meters down, what do you do next?
You've also got to make sure that your feed point is weatherproofed adequately.
Meanwhile, I'm looking up the original graphic because I cropped it for the website, so I left out the stuff on the sides. I just posted an image of this of the scan itself.
Roy, if it tells you there's a defect 1.3 meters away, what relevance is that?
Well, it tells you you got a bum coax cable and you probably should get a nice, shiny new one.
You don't need that kind of sophistication to do that.
No, but if you have the equipment anyway and it's sitting there, I mean, I've used a TDR to just tell me which one of my coiled up wires are 50 feet and which one are 35 feet.
Yeah, yeah, and also to make sure there's no water in the coax.
Well, in the case of the wire I was working with, they were virgin wires. I cut them and put connectors on them and put them in a big bag and forgot to label them.
I just thought of something. How old is the antenna in question? Because you get corrosion at the base because that little waterproof shield often is
off the part that it was coming through the window. So, there's no other dents in the coax, and I wired a new PL259 onto it. So I know at least at the antenna connection, there's a connector that cannot have had any water or anything in it because it was inside my apartment the whole time.
Was Michael in here, I opened up the, peeled off the thing off the bottom. It was all kinds of corroded and completely shot. I had to do a major rework, but in the end, it was exposed outside a lot.
He said I cut off the end that was outside. I cut off about 6 feet of it that was outside, so... the majority of this wire, except for maybe a foot or two, was all inside after I cut off the 6 feet that was outside. And one thing about tram, you could say what you want about the Chinese, if in fact this is a Chinese vertical. It cost about $70 or so, $75. They machined the fittings on this and... the attachments to, like, the side of the house or whatever, the brackets, they machined those beautifully. I was shocked and amazed. And the right hardware was with it, so it's sitting in its new metal tube, and the PL259 is protected from the outside by this metal tube, so... I think I'll be okay with that. I was just wondering, just for argument's sake, you know, if I could read if this coax is all the way okay going to the antenna. And not that it's going to matter really at all, but it would be nice to know.
AC2GS. If you look at the software, it has these blue tabs. The last blue tab is for the Smith chart. Right before the last tab is a tab that's labeled TDR, time domain reflectometry. So that's the tab you would like to take a look at if you're interested.
KG2RY.
That's it for me, Will. Thanks a lot.
Okie doke. Yes, David.
All of your connections. That also might help.
Okay, I only heard half of that, something about a connection. Would you like to repeat it, please, for me?
No, I suggest to Rich that he check all of his connections. Connection at the feed point, connection that's coming in the window, connection to the radio, you know? Because there could be one little problem in there that's messing everything up.
Okay, very good. It's always a good idea to recheck your connections, make sure they're nice and tight. Some connections work their way loose, especially SMA connectors. I've actually gone to the trouble of getting a torque wrench specifically for brass SMA connectors so that I have less of a problem with them suddenly, slowly working their way loose, but that's always something to keep in mind.
SO-259s, I forget which is which. And I have an oldest one now, a near and dear one to me, been on many antennas, but I just rewired the one that's in the house again, resolder everything, just to make absolutely sure. But I know Ed is rolling his eyes by now. It's probably the manufacturing of the antenna that's giving me the 2.5 to 1, and I'm going to have to live with it, guys. That's just the way the old bank account jingles. Back to you, Roy, and thanks.
Okay, you're welcome, Rich. Thank you for the question. Thank you for participating. Thanks for everyone who participated in this and our previous subject. I guess, David, would you like to discuss your new Windows computer?
I have a comment.
Okay, yeah, please comment, Wesley.
I have a short comment about from the practical science standpoint about the whole science above. Polarity is important as a gain, radiation pattern, and VSWR. And in transmitting antennas, the polarization of an antenna is the direction of the electromagnetic fields produced by an antenna. As energy radiates away from it, the directional fields determine the direction of E plane in which the energy moves away from or is received by an antenna. Transmitting and receiving antennas are designed with the specific type of polarization and interesting characteristics. But when we talk about the receiving antennas, that was one of the comments. Only electromagnetic energy that possesses the same polarization as the antenna can be received. An antenna with horizontal polarization cannot receive any electromagnetic energy in vertical planes. And when I was asked about circular polarization, we have linear or vertical polarization. Let me drop. Linear or vertical polarization that refers to the oscillation of an antenna's electric field or either on either the horizontal or vertical plane. And slant antenna that was that 45 degrees oscillates at 45 degrees angle to the reference plane. Then circular polarization, how is it called? CP, right? Regards or a radio wave that rotates as the signal propagates. The rotation can be to the right, that would be right-hand circular polarization, or to the left, and it would be left LHCP. And then we have electrical polarization that is characterized by electric field that is propagated in elliptical helix. Thank you very much. Until next year.
TD2FIU.
Yes, George recognized. One second, I just want to make a comment. Ed mentioned the right and left hand polarization of polarized antennas. Pretty much the problem is that, again, theoretically, at a right angle, you shouldn't get any kind of reception because the equation is the cosine. So cosine of 90 is zero. So energy at a 90 degree angle doesn't get used, transferred. The reality, though, is real antennas in the world are almost never perfectly anything. They're never perfectly linear. They're elliptical. Extreme ellipses are lines. And so the veering off of it being a purely linearly polarized antenna allows for a 90 degree difference in polarization angle still getting partially received because of that elliptical aspect of a linear transmitting antenna. So I just wanted to put that across. George, what would you like to say?
Very close to what you were saying. It all depends on whether or not you have the difference of vertical, horizontal. Doesn't matter. Depends on the band, the frequency, the high frequency, the low frequency, the conditions you're bouncing off of, whether it's buildings at high frequency, whether it's the ionosphere, whether it's active. So it's not a direct correlative relationship. Radio waves go. We receive them. We work on receiving them.
Trust me, the world is a hall of mirrors for RF.
I understand that kind of loss. I understand what Dr. Roy says, but frequency has nothing to do with polarization. And to actually...
No. Higher frequencies travel different than lower frequencies.
Yes, that's correct. They travel different. Actually, they travel the same. They are just exposed to different variables. But frequency has nothing to do with polarization, George.
Well, no. When we're talking about one planet called Earth, the higher you go in frequency, the more directive upward you're going to travel with your radio waves.
George, try to understand one simple thing, please. Photon goes through the straight lines. We're not talking about low frequency being different from the high frequency. Only we're talking about different variables that low frequency is affected with and the high frequency is affected with. And to Exxon.
We're not talking about photons. We're radio operators. VHF, UHF, SHF travel more directly straight up. They don't travel along the Earth line.
Well, I was talking about practical science. Dr. Roy.
Yeah, let me just put in a couple of little comments and calm everyone down, because this is a hobby. We're all supposed to be having fun here. Is that different radio waves of different frequencies are affected by the environment of Faraday rotation, of reflection, of multipath, and there's a whole bunch of realities that cause a radio waves polarization angle to change, either rotate or reverse or what have you. So I think that we're all talking the same thing, but we're doing it so loudly that we're not listening to each other.
No, you're absolutely right. In last TechNet, I was publicly intimidated with no reason by George, and that what makes me actually sensitive and to extreme.
Wesley, what did you just do?
That's what you did. That was your comment. Mic to you, Dr. Roy. That was during my transmission for no reason. And to Exxon.
KD2FIU, but I was correct.
No, you were not correct, and Dr. Roy said this is not like you think. It's like John killed. John is a killer. Or John killed a fly. John did a good thing. You interrupted in a half word or half sentence, and you read your mind into the half of the sentence, and that's your problem. And to Exxon.
Yes, indeed. Let's get back to the technical net. And again, I try to remind everyone out there, this is a hobby. We're supposed to be having fun. So So, you know, try not to take life too seriously. Life outside, way, way serious. A lot of serious things happening. Life inside, on the radio, not that serious. So once again, David, would you like to tell me about your new Windows 10 computer that you picked up recently? Very witty indeed. Anyway, perhaps.